Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Are you troubled by stale podcasts in the middle of the night?
Do you love films that feature the busting of spooks, specters, or ghosts?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute.
Ghostbusters Resurrection is an RPG audio drama combining tabletop gaming and cinematic paranormal elimination adventures.
Call the professionals at nerdyshow.com/ghostbusters.
We're ready to believe you.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com. What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here with another episode of Flame On. It is the month of March, and we are here with our microsode, which probably won't be so micro, because this topic deserves our full attention. We've been waiting for 8 long weeks to do this episode, and it is finally time. Although, if you are one of our patrons, thank you very much, first of all. But you did hear some of our conversation and our initial thoughts on the first half of the show on our Patreon. But we're here to do a full dive into the world of WandaVision. WandaVision. And as promised, I'm going to introduce him first because I told y'all, I said this back in, I think, late December, early January, when we first were talking about this. And I said, I'm going to make sure that this man, this person, this lady friend of ours makes her way onto the show to talk about this show. Because she is our very own Scarlet Bitch. Oral is here.
I was right, hoes. I was right. I got everything I wanted. A bitch was right. Welcome back, me. Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here and talk about the greatest story ever told.
We are also joined on the West Coast by Brian.
Hello.
And also in Orlando, we've got Eric.
Howdy.
And BJ.
Hi.
Hello, everybody. It has been 8 long weeks. 9 episodes of WandaVision have been released into the world. And we got a story that was told in a way that I never anticipated Marvel telling a story. And we got a masterclass in storytelling about grief. And what it can do not only to the person that is living through the grief, but what that grief can intentionally and unintentionally do to the people around them. So we are going to dive into what we thought about the show, things that we enjoyed. We'll talk about some potential either missed opportunities or maybe things that we wish had been done better. Maybe even dive into some wild speculation about where these dangling plot threads that were teased to us at the end of the final episode, the series finale, this episode 9 that just released a few days ago from when we're recording this. So let's go ahead and we'll let this magical girl be the star of the show and tell us how he enjoyed WandaVision. Oral, what was your overall thoughts and what were some big highlights and good takeaways from WandaVision for you?
I loved it from beginning to end. I think it seamlessly moved through the different eras of television. It knew what it wanted to do. I've been reading articles about it, and I try to stay away from thought pieces because they usually just end up being echo chambers of just like everything I agree with, or like, you know, the dime store critic who wants to put in their two cents, not understanding like how stories work. Having the space to like build over what 9 episodes was a joy to watch. I think the biggest thing for me was WandaVision decided to tell a story, a very specific story about, you know, two characters who have been underserved in the movies, who have been underserved in the comics from time to time. And I'm not the biggest Vision fan. I like Vision because Vision and Wanda have had great stories together. But seeing both of those characters interact without the distraction of like Scarlett Johansson or that guy who plays Hawkeye, who may also be Scarlett Johansson. It was amazing to me. And it also showed me that you control your audience and it still be okay. Like, people had all of these crazy, insane fan theories, but they're not obligated to give you any of those. Does it build the story? Does it add to the story? Or do you just want to see it because you think it's cool? They did so many things that were cool that had nothing to do with like the greater Marvel universe. But, you know, focusing on these two characters, giving them amazing development, you know, giving them their own sort of like bubble to play in, pardon the pun, was just phenomenal to me. And then, like, of course, those big fan moments when you see like Monica manifest her powers, the twins, you know, Wanda being called the Scarlet Witch, which I never thought they would ever call her. And seeing her in an updated costume, like in her own right, just lording over these hoes. It was everything I wanted. It was everything I wanted.
Absolutely. When she got called the Scarlet Witch, I legit squealed in my house.
I gasped. Like,
it was ridiculous.
And do you know how hard it has been for me? Because I've either been watching WandaVision at like 3 o'clock in the morning where I can't scream my head off, or I'm watching it at like 9 or 10 in the morning and my roommate's office, his home office, is the room next to mine. So he's in all of these like really important meetings and I can't scream my head off as moments that I have waited my goddamn entire life for are going on.
Oh goodness, I love it. I love it. Eric, what were your thoughts on WandaVision?
I thought this was a really great format to tell a story of this character, because I don't think it would have been as effective to try and squeeze her entire journey of grief into a 2.5 hour movie. I think a lot of stuff would have gotten thrown to the wayside. I don't think you would have gotten time to develop some of the secondary characters as well. And they probably would have tried to squeeze a big bad into it to explain the hex more so than it just being her own grief. And I think it was really effective that way that they told it. And just let her and Vision's relationship breathe. So I loved that. I loved the secondary characters. Jimmy and Darcy were fantastic. Monica, everything about her is fantastic. She's probably going to go into Captain Marvel 2 is when we'll see her again, probably. And then just everything about Catherine Hahn. Everything.
The best.
She was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. BJ, give us some thoughts and insights that you had on WandaVision.
So, the music. Holy fucking shit. Like, they got it was the creators of all the music from Frozen. Yep. That couple, to kind of craft a lot of the music, but it was also just the way the music was felt throughout the show. I think I sent you guys the analysis that somebody did, that technically we've been listening to Agatha all along, or some version of it, with the similar rhythm, sometimes similar notes, but definitely the similar rhythm. And I found that fucking downright diabolical. Like, I was just like, how has nobody else done this in a way that was just so fucking perfect? Because even that song was like number one on iTunes. I think it might still be number one on iTunes right now. So that was great. I definitely love the whole, because for me, the biggest tragedy for me in all of the MCU is we never got a Secret Avengers movie before Infinity War. And I would have loved to have seen, you know, Tony's team working on some sort of issue. You've got Steve's team working on some sort of issue. And then you have Wanda and Vision kind of meeting, having these secret meetings to see each other, falling in love. Like, I wanted that in the worst way. And this scratched that itch so much. It was perfect, because you don't really get decent romance in sort of the action comic book genre. I really can't think of anyone that ever stood out to me that I was like, oh, but this definitely, it scratched that itch. It wasn't scared to pull punches at times. Like, you're just sitting there like, okay, where are the kids at? Are they good? They're taking a nap? Like, just moments like that where you're like, and the whole thing with White Vision, that was the most Vision-y fight ever. Like, Vision's always been one of those characters that's like, hold up. Let's talk about a logic problem. And I was like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing. And that was something that the character would do, and there's no question about it. That he would be like, all right, we're just wailing on each other. We're both made of the same material. This isn't going to work.
It harkens back to a War Games. The only way to win is not to play.
Yeah, and it also harkens back to when all the Avengers were discussing the Sokovia Accords, and Vision's like, let me propose an equation, and Rhodey's reaction like, oh, this is going to be good. It definitely, it hit all those sweet notes for me, and I'm super excited to see what the future holds for everybody. Like, I really, the thing that shocked me the most is that once White Vision kind of got his memories back with none of the context and none of the emotional attachment, he just kind of took off. So,
ain't that like a man that just up and leaves?
But that's pretty much what happened in the comics. When they rebuilt Vision, he had his memories, but he had none of the emotional attachment to them. And Wanda's just kind of like, sup? And he's like, sup? And then, like, you know, they kind of, their relationship kind of didn't happen again, because he's not the same person. So it'll be very interesting if he does pop up in Doctor Strange 2. It'll be very interesting if he pops up in, like, Secret Invasion. And I think Monica's supposed to also pop up in Secret Invasion. I think Secret Invasion, Riri is supposed to pop up in it. Nick Fury, Monica.
Oh, Lord, here we go. All these fan theories.
They're on the cast list. They're actually on the thing. Now, whether or not they're going to pull a Ralph Boner and be like somebody signed this, Riri Williams, and then that's the end. That's the only cameo. But yeah, no, it was perfect jumping off point for a lot of the projects that they're thinking about doing. They definitely learned a lesson from The Mandalorian, where I don't think they expected The Mandalorian to be kind of this new springboard for Star Wars. And so now that they've kind of seen that formula, they definitely used it here. And Marvel always excels when they try something new. So, like the whole idea, the first Doctor Strange movie was supposed to be the first horror movie in the MCU, but they got scared and they scaled it back. So now Multiverse of Madness is supposed to be more horror inclined, especially with Sam Raimi dealing with it. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. But like if this is any sign of things to come, because next we got the other two people with PTSD, Falcon and Winter Soldier, coming in. So it'll be very interesting to see how that shakes out. I can't wait for
all shake it out for each other.
I mean, honestly, it could just be them sitting there arguing with each other for like 45 minutes, which I think that's what every episode is going to be.
And then make up sex at the end of it.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm in. I'm sold.
I mean, they don't even have to have makeup sex. They could hate each other in the middle of it. That's fine too.
Hate sex. I'm good with that too. Like whatever works.
But no, WandaVision, 10 out of 10. Perfect. I'm probably gonna rewatch it with like a tub of ice cream. The final thing is, I absolutely loved that 90% of the fan theories didn't happen. I'm completely okay with that, because there were some fan theories that I was like, this isn't a CW show. You're not just going to merge the universes and act like it did nothing, like the previous two seasons didn't happen. Like, no. So I'm very excited that 90% of the fan theories didn't happen.
And the best part is they've given us the perfect cackling reaction, which is Agatha holding a dead Sparky. I just love it. I use it so often.
I use the wink one. The wink one's probably that's the one I use.
So many amazing reactions.
Oh, and quick shout out to Black Twitter for the Vishon memes.
Vishon is great.
Those have been beautiful. So thank you, Black Twitter, for that. That is a gift from the gods.
That was amazing. That absolutely was fantastic. Brian, what are some positive takeaways for you from WandaVision?
You guys have like, you know, talked about everything.
Girl, you go in third. I still have to go. Or fourth. I still have to go. And yeah, by the time I'm just going to be like, the font they used for the credits was fantastic.
I'm sorry, Brian. I know normally music's your thing, but I had to talk about it.
No. Actually, honestly, other than the themes, the music was fairly rote as far as like, I love the themes. Oh gosh, was it Beck? Chris Beck? I
think Christoph Beck is rolling over in his grave right now. Thank you.
It was good. It was fine. It's serviceable. I love the themes, and I love the end credits theme. That's his, I think, major contribution. But like, I love the show for what it tried to do for most of it. No, I want this to be clear on anything I say after. I did really enjoy the show. I love the focus on TV history. I love the love and attention to detail that every era's version of whatever it's representing took. I love all of the character actors who I was going back through, and I'm like, oh my God, it's, you know, Kat Dennings, obviously, Evan Peters, of course, Randall Park, yes. But like Deborah Jo Rupp, who is the mom from That 70s Show.
Oh, yeah.
Fred Melamed, who he's been in so many things, and I can't remember one iconic role, but God, there's just so many people who were in the show in a very supporting role that were amazing. But of course, like Catherine Hahn and Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen, like they stole the show. Like, and oh my God, like the Monica Rambeau, and I don't know Teyonah Parris's other work, but like, I've never thought that I would see Monica Rambeau, one of my favorite characters from Next Wave, which they'll never do. Next
Wave. It's never going to happen. It's never
going to happen. Oh my God. I wish it would. I wish it could, right? Because it's so, I love that. I love that comic. But like, I just, it's so cool to see Marvel's deeper cuts brought to the masses in a way that is not only palatable as Marvel, but has these delightful flourishes like the TV, you know, exploration and stuff. So I love all of that. I will save any criticisms until, I guess, a future round here. But I definitely had moments where I felt like the show, I don't know what it would have done differently. Like, I don't have like, oh, it should have done this versus that. But like, I know people who love the show until they got to like the full stop Marvel part, which of course is going to be there. Like, it's a Marvel show. Of course it is. But that really was a hard sell for them because they didn't really care about the backstory. And again, that's not, I'm not saying the piece is flawed because of that, but it certainly complicates like the relationship that the audience had to the material. Like that first episode where they did the, oh God, what was the episode title? It was And Now for a Commercial Break or what?
For a live studio audience.
No, we interrupt this program.
That's it.
Yeah.
So all of the episode titles were very stock television like lines like that. I don't know if anyone else like went back and looked at the, you know, the titles, but They're all like that, right? And that episode I dug because it really it explained so much and it linked it really deeply into the Marvel Cinematic Universe like lore and continuity. But for a lot of people who didn't know that, didn't care about that, but they just were loving that television sort of journey, it was hard. I saw many people who kind of hit that episode and it was like the brakes. And I don't know what I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you do both. They did, I think, try their best and succeed more than fail in making a show that is really special as a version, as an exploration of television, and as a great addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But again, it's impossible, I think, to please both sets of audiences, right? But anyway, I say that only as a contrarian kind of position, right? I did enjoy it overall. The moment when Wiccan and not Hulkling, the moment when Wiccan and what's the other
Speed.
I'm sorry, that's such a generic superhero name, right? The moment when they showed up as like and they got their powers, like I audibly like gasped and sort of had like an emotional beat. The moment when Vision, I mean, we're spoiling stuff, right? The moment when, you know, White Vision gets his memories back and you see that there's a continuity there, that blew my mind. The fact that they mentioned the ship of Theseus, which if you're a Doctor Who fan, I'm sure pop culture has used this many times over, but like the Doctor, Capaldi's first episode talking about a broom and when you replace the broom handle, is it the same as the, you know, that whole thing. Like, that's so, it's such a great intellectual exercise. I love that the two major pop culture properties have worked that into their story beats. It's like really cool to see that kind of thing, right? And of course, Catherine Hahn. One more thing. Catherine Hahn, I love her to death. I love that she sang the theme song in part. Although I guess there's a bear actor singer. Oh, no, he's a singer who did the pity, pity, pity. Like the little bass line in that part. I guess he like does Voices of Liberty in Anaheim. So anyway, random aside, who cares? But I love Catherine Hahn so much. The CG-ish face when she reveals herself fully and is like levitating at the end of that one episode, her glow up, a little distracting, a little like, wait, that's CG. It was a weird beat visually for me. And I mean, I think we've passed around memes about it. Right. I mean, you know, again, such a great show overall. I just, those things kind of were like, oh, huh. But yeah.
Wait, are you referring to Agastasia Beverly Harkness Hills?
So I have three counterpoints to you, Brian.
Please.
One, how dare you talk about the way she looked in your shake and go wig after watching 52,000 seasons of Drag Race and eating it up with a goddamn spoon.
He put on his best season 4 Dieter Ritz wig.
Two, I have a really big issue talking about like, how do you please the audience? I think great storytelling doesn't take the audience into account. And it is us, like, as the audience, to decide, do we want to participate in this form, art form, yes or no? And so to say that, like, oh, you know, this is where the hard stop is, like, I was loving everything prior or, like, after, I think it isn't really valid when you think about, like, you know, you are going to watch a Marvel series. Yes, it's very different from everything that we have watched, but that's the contract that we make when we're experiencing something, right? And so, like, I don't think it's, you know, I've heard a lot of complaints where it's like, oh, like, the first three episodes are so slow, or I really wasn't into it. But then, like, on the other side, is like, as soon as the Marvel stuff started to kind of weave its way in, like, I loved it. But that's not taking the piece as a whole. That's you piecemealing what you like and what you don't like. But that's not the art form as a whole. And I think we do that more with television series than we do with movies, because you think of movies as this, like, continuous sort of thing, and television series as these, like, truncated pieces. But if WandaVision, or, you know, we were talking about The Mandalorian, has taught us anything, is that we need to get back to the serialized way we consume, because we're so used to binging everything and taking it as a whole. And it's not. It's, you know, that's not how they want it. They wanted it to build. You put all these pieces together. And I think to take out those pieces and say, this thing now does not work, and that's not what you're saying, but to not take something as a whole, I don't think is, I think that that's flawed. That's fundamentally flawed.
Well, and I don't disagree with you at all. Like, I look at it as a gestalt, like you're saying. I look at it as a whole piece that's episodic. I am only saying that there is this expectation with television. I think you're spot on. It's about television and the nature of a show historically for mostly the United States, but I'm sure also other countries that have this problem. And the show has this continuity and consistency of style. Mm-hmm. And that first episode, I mean, it kind of goes back to, like, the Happy Days jump the shark episode, which I'm not saying WandaVision jumped the shark. That's not what I'm saying here. But when you groom expectations of the audience and then you throw them that first curveball, one of two things will happen, right? Some fucking love it, eat more of it, like, turn into it, just dig it. And that's, I think that's all of us. But then there are the shows where the audience people, and they're, that's how they feel. They get that curveball and they go, well, this isn't what I signed up for. Now, that's not right or wrong, but that's their way to react. And so all I'm pointing out is it's a Herculean task to me what they did. And I think as a gestalt, it works really well, but it definitely could have been a little deceiving for some people who, again, have that idea that there should be this consistency of form. So just, you know, it's an exploration of that. I don't agree with it. I think, like I said, it's lovely.
I was going to say, you know, touching on deceiving, like, the show is about deception. Like, absolutely. You deceive yourself and you build this fantasy world. And, like, we are watching a show within a show. But, you know, for some people in the show, this is reality. And, you know, for others, it's a hellish landscape. I found it very reassuring. I thought it was a lovely place to raise children, if you are so inclined. But I think that deception, because, you know, like, this is the most fun I have had in a Marvel film, period. Mm-hmm. I think completely subverting what people anticipated was half the fun. Because you want to be surprised. And I think the surprises, you know, landed really well. And just when you thought you understood something, you knew you were absolutely fucking wrong. Except for me, who was right. I was right.
No, and I love that you're right. The wool, the rug being pulled out from under you is a moment in television. I mean, like, one of my favorite shows is Mr. Robot. Those first moments when you realize what you've been seeing is unreliable as a narrator. Mm-hmm. Or just everything is immediately recontextualized in this really cool way. I live for that. That is my jam. Any show that pulls that off. So I was so happy when, I mean, we all kind of had a sense that, you know, Agnes was not who she said, you know, but like that moment when they did the theme song, it's just, it's perfection. It's so delicious as a moment of turning everything on its head. But then it's funny because it also backed it up a little bit and was like, well, everything except that, no, Wanda still did all this shit and it's still, you know, whatever.
Well, and the thing is, she may not had actually been Agnes, but the bitch is now, until Wanda says otherwise.
I was disappointed by that. Honestly, if I could have picked the ending I wanted, I would have totally had her redeemed and be like aged and become the Agatha Harkness from the comics. But that's me being a comics fan and, you know, wanting that reality, right? But
I mean, I was hoping that they wouldn't age her, but that they would do that. When she said the line about, I can teach you how to do, I was like, okay, this is how we're going to get to keep her.
Yeah.
And grow out of this whole thing, which didn't happen, obviously. But the door is still there. They didn't kill her off. They didn't, you know, do anything super drastic with her. They can go back to that well and say, okay, let's go ahead and do this.
I'm glad Marvel learned the lesson of not killing off your villains, because it took how many Iron Mans and other movies, Spider-Mans, and like,
oh, yeah.
Don't kill your villains off because they could come back and be useful, you know?
Well, my thing is that because I really, even though she was heavy-handed in the way she went about things, I don't see Agatha really as a villain. I see her more as just an opportunist. She saw an opportunity to get something she wanted, and then she realized, oh no, this is not what I expected to find. And the interesting thing to me is that, to me, nobody, there was really no redemption in the show. Whereas, like, Wanda, everything, as soon as she fully realized herself as a Scarlet Witch, there was something absent in her character that's always been there, and we're gonna find out whether or not that's a good or bad thing in Doctor Strange, possibly, because the thing is, she's somebody put it very, very eloquently, is they said, you know, Wanda is now fully realized as a Scarlet Witch. That's awesome. She also has a lot of free time and she's studying the Darkhold. Uh-oh. So it's one of those things is, and something about Wanda bugged me, and I got, and this might be me reading into things too much, but everything in Age of Ultron was Wanda's doing. From the moment she futzed with Tony's brain, Tony already had the idea for Ultron, but the moment she fucked with his brain and he had the Mind Stone, all of a sudden all this shit's happening, including Vision being created. And it's just one of those things where I'm like, that seems awfully weird. And then once we get into WandaVision, even the way her powers reacted once her grief was really released, I'm like, so it's really the biggest question right now is, now that Wanda's aware of what her powers are, is she actually in control of her own powers? And if she's not controlling her powers, what or who is?
Well, you're asking, is she the villain or the hero? I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? Yeah. But before we, there's so many directions, right? Pat, what did you love about this series?
Sorry, Pat.
The font usage was fantastic.
It was a delightful font.
There's a lot that I could just retread and I'm not going to, but the opening credits stylized for the different sitcom eras were fantastic. The Bewitch, the one that was heavily influenced by Bewitch, the second episode, is probably my favorite. That theme song is still my favorite to this day. And it is the one that is the full set of tritones complete. Like, that's, that is the tritones for that entire song. Like, that is what it's comprised of, where a lot of the other ones have modifications or bits and pieces where it's used. So I legit will just be walking down the street and go, WandaVision, WandaVision. But I enjoyed the show very much. It's funny, Brian, that you said that you saw a lot of reactions where people were hardcore invested in the first three episodes and then hit a wall once it got to episode four. I saw the complete opposite everywhere, and I still see it. Like today, I was I've stayed away from Facebook a lot for the last like month and a half, and I was scrolling through today, and because I have muted so many people in areas that are just not being responsible, I have a whole new Facebook because I've snoozed so many people that it was somebody I don't really interact with often, and they were like, "Oh, we try to, you know, we heard all the hype about WandaVision, so we gave it a try. Worst show." And I want to sit there and be like, "No, you are just bad. You are a bad person." But a lot of the comments were just like, "Oh, it was so boring. I fell asleep. I, you know, blah blah blah." And it's just like, I know that you have to be a certain type of fan. Like, you can't just have casually seen a Marvel movie or two and feel invested in the show. I know that we have a deeper connection because of the comics, because we actually have lived with these characters longer than just the last couple of years since, what was 2015 was Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. So that's where we got Scarlet Witch and Vision introduced into the MCU. So seeing like all of that progress, and I'm a huge lover of old sitcoms. When I was growing up, and this will tell my age, Nick at Night was late 50s, 60s sitcoms. So, same. Yeah. So, I mean, we're all roughly in the same, like, you know, plus or minus 5 years from me. Where nowadays, like, if you turn on Nick at Night, it's, you know, the George Lopez show from, you know, 2005 or whatever. And it's just big like, oof. Oh, so crazy. But that's what I grew up on, because that's what we watched at night. You know, I watched My Three Sons and the Patty Duke show and all of those things. So for me, the first three episodes were fantastic in just kind of like the ridiculousness of it all, like and seeing a different aspect and a different side of these characters and knowing that it's building to a bigger story, because unlike a movie, you know that this is spanning the course of 8 weeks. And just kind of really getting to dig into all of the ridiculousness. And now, having seen it all, I watched the first two episodes again and caught littler nods to things that than what were initially brought up in the think pieces and the 89 things you missed in this episode of WandaVision, including like the first theme song, the first intro. The first introduction to the show, there is a line that says that calls Wanda a magical gal. Mm-hmm. And then when we get the Agatha Harkness reveal, you know, when she comes out and you didn't think you were the only magical girl in town, like getting all of those references now are so crazy. The fact that, you know, how Wanda was manipulating their minds and when they break free, like they're how they feel. Go back to that dinner scene with the hearts, where the look of panic and fear in Mrs. Hart's eyes, like that whole thing, like takes on a different level of creepy and crazy. And it just
like when she's saying, "Make it stop, make yeah. it stop, make it stop."
The like her eyes.
She's just not talking about the choking man on the floor at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's so insane to go back and like. To rewatch it and know all of this stuff now. And it just brings another level. Like it was fantastic. The memes that have come out of it have been some of the best things, you know, in the last month or so, like that have just, oh, so good. And then on a personal note, interacting with some of like my favorite drag queens about this show, and like every Friday for the last, you know, like month and change, I would tweet back and forth with Nina West and talk WandaVision. It's like the craziest thing, seeing how far and wide the show has spread, like seeing so many of the Drag Race queens get into it. But yeah, I mean, overall, I really thoroughly enjoyed the show. When we got the Scarlet Witch reveal, like I talked about before, when I saw White Vision for the first time, I screamed out loud. Like, that one episode from Probability Hex to Chaos Magic to the Scarlet Witch to White Vision, like, that right there was like a checklist of every comic, like, a thing imaginable for me that got brought into it. Because one of the weirdest things has always been the Probability Hex and like describing Wanda's power. Mm-hmm. In that respect, like, we always talk about, oh, she bends the fabric of reality, blah blah blah. Yeah, Franklin Richards does that, Proteus does that, we get it. Like, there was always something more to it, and I love that. I loved the illusion that after she left Westview, she quickly slid into her folklore / Evermore phase in the mountains. That was fantastic. I am still, the first thing when I saw that mountain and that lake and everything, the first thing that slipped off my tongue, mind you, I live alone with my dog, so Havoc isn't saying anything to anybody, so I just talk out loud to myself, really. I just go, Wondegore. And in my head, like, I call it wild fan speculation, but I want that to be Wondegore Mountain. I want it to have that tie to Wanda and her, like, comic backstory. And I can hope and I can pray, but it was just fantastic. So there's my positive thoughts on WandaVision. Now, dear listeners, we hope that you are enjoying this and all of the other multimedia that is coming your way by Flame On and the Nerdy Show Network and Omniverse. If you are enjoying us, why not head over to our brand new website? I'm going to call it brand new for like 6 months, and then it'll become, you know, just our regular website. But it's all nice and pretty. And if you haven't been there in a while, go check it out, because it's a fancy schmancy new website. It has all of our links to different social media platforms for the show, ways that you can connect and interact with us, both directly and through email or Discord means. You can follow us on YouTube. You can follow our individual Twitch channels. And now that BJ is in the Twitch stream seat, he has been added to our list of Twitch streams on our website. Now we just need to get Eric to get his ass in gear and start streaming on Twitch. But all of that is there for your enjoyment. And as is our link to our Threadless store. So if you are in the mood to support the show by purchasing some swag, why not check out our apparel and accessories on our Threadless shop? And you can also go to our Patreon and join up on our Patreon under one of our current levels. New levels are coming soon. We're hammering out details currently, and we'll get those up very soon. And I will say this in our next episode where it will be official, but a huge shout out to Joel Bradshaw, who has been a listener and a friend of our podcast for a long time. He is our newest patron. So thank you, Joel, and happy belated birthday. His birthday was a couple of days ago. I want to say like 4 days ago from when we're recording. So it'll be like a little over a week when this episode comes out. But happy belated birthday, Joel, and thank you for being a patron. You can join Joel as a patron of our show at patreon.com/flameonshow. And you can check out our website at flameonshow.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we've talked the positives for the most part. I think we covered a lot of great ground. The show had a lot of really great things that are brought to the table. But I think there are maybe some areas for improvement. I don't even want to call it improvement. Like, what are things that maybe you thought could have happened, should have happened, or ways that you would have maybe tweaked the show in your opinion? Let's throw it over to Oral.
I think it was absolutely perfect. I think they gave us, like I said, the greatest story ever told. As a Scarlet Witch fan, you get nothing. I've gotten nothing all my life. Everybody else gets toys. Everybody else gets merchandise. It was perfect. And the furor behind it, the excitement, goes to show you that you can tell a story about two weird characters that have always, in my mind, been A-list characters but never got their due. And I thought it was, well, like, you don't have to get everything out of something, but what they do give you can be everything to you. And that's what I felt like. And we will be taking no other questions.
I don't disagree with you because they have not been given a lot of due. And one thing that I didn't say before, one of the things that I appreciated the most about the show was that it, in a short period of time, especially in that trip down memory lane, it gave us everything we needed to know about why and how Wanda and Vision connected. Because it always felt rushed in the movies. It was like, here they are introduced in this movie. Here they are in the second movie. Weirdly kind of vibing on each other. And then they're in love and on the run in this third movie.
Post-coitus.
Yeah, like, it didn't seem to, like, it was left to us as comic fans to know, oh, they're together. Like, that's just how this is supposed to be. And we fill in that blank space with our comic knowledge. So to get that scene with probably the most quoted line of this show, it put everything into a great perspective for me for that. And now, Oral, you have tons of merchandise, including a fantastic Scarlet Witch levitating Funko Pop, which
no lie, I'm dodging and weaving these Funko Pops, but they got me with the Hot Toys. Have you seen the Hot Toy yet?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to send the link to the group. They got me good. I'm going to have to do some begging and pleading because that bitch is going to be expensive, but I need it.
I saw the Cosbabies, I think, yesterday. And some other stuff, but that White Vision Funko Pop that glows in the dark, oof. So, BJ, what improvements or things that maybe didn't 100% hit the mark with you were there in WandaVision?
My client pleads the fifth.
So it's funny because there was an interview done on Kevin Smith's podcast with the director and I think the creator, and he actually said, they asked him this kind of this question, like, what are your regrets, what wasn't included or something you wanted to do, and he actually said he had more stuff filmed with Monica, Darcy, and Jimmy, and it was just little bits and pieces, but he said he really wanted all three of them to be have a bigger part in that final fight. And he said Monica's part definitely got in there, but he definitely wanted more for Jimmy and Darcy. So honestly, my only complaint is that we didn't get more. Like, we didn't get more episodes or more of Monica. But I'm beyond excited for Monica for all of the other projects. So if their point was to make me hungry for more women of color in the MCU, they did a fantastic job. And they honestly, I really, really want to spin off with Darcy and Jimmy in the worst way, or at least have them pop up more like Agent Coulson did at the start of the MCU. So yeah, just more is probably is my complaint. I wanted even more.
And
that's just me being greedy.
And apparently they filmed the scene with Monica, the kids, and Ralph trying to sneak back into the basement to get the Darkhold. Oh, and wow. Then they run into Senora Scratchy, and Senora Scratchy turns into a demon. And there's he describes it as an American Werewolf in London, like, transformation and scene.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it was filmed. Doesn't have the completed CGI with it, but they ended up cutting it because of time constraints, and it just felt too over bloated for what it was. But I agree with you. I love that Darcy popped in by ramming the funnel cake truck into the sword vehicle and trapping Hayward and you know, having his come up.
Oh, Mr. Mayo.
Yeah,
that's what I've been calling him, Mr. Mayo.
Eric, what points of contention or things would you change with WandaVision?
Anything Eric says from here on out, he's a goddamn liar and probably a junkie.
I could have used more episodes as far as, again, like we talked about, we were all such that Nick at Night old sitcom stuff. I would have liked more kind of a slower evolution of shows. But again, that would have elongated the story and probably would have thrown off the timing of everything. But I would have loved more play with those different genres of sitcoms. The Evan Peters of it all, I go back and forth on. Because on one hand, I was so excited his first, like when he first showed up, and like I'm like, oh my god, all the things that this could mean. And then it just turned into Ralph Boner. And I don't know how they could have dealt with Wanda's grief over Pietro without doing something like that. Something that the audience would have easily recognized as Pietro. You couldn't have had just a random person come up and be Pietro. It had to be one of those two actors. So it made sense. It just kind of, at the end, left me wanting more again.
I mean, it was a long way to go for a dick joke. Like, it really was.
That was
a long game for a dick joke, but I mean,
it felt too meta.
But that was the best part of it for me, honestly, because it almost, without them even knowing, and I'm sure they knew that there were going to be all of these fan theories that they knew they weren't going to pay off, but they knew. And like you said, it had to be one of the two actors, because us as the viewers, not as part of, you know, anything else, because in world, everybody was like, she recast Pietro, you know, we'll put dash quote Darcy, you know. But for us as viewers, we had to know a Pietro or a Peter, as he was in the Fox X-Men universe. But I love the fact that it was this whole, like, kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, but meant nothing, because everybody was like, this is how the X-Men are going to be brought in. It's going to be this whole thing. There's going to be mutants. There's going to be blah, 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 blah. And as time went on, I was like, none of this is going to lead to mutants. Like, why would it? Because her magic wasn't her mutation. Her magic was separate from her mutation, which wasn't a mutation, which was, you know, like, it's this whole weird thing and how comics are retconny and do all of this stuff. But I thought it was fantastic in that respect. And also because while I love the time in a bottle scene, the use of Quicksilver in the X-Men movies was just, it was a one trick pony that by the time we got to the fourth time around, it was this, the biggest throwaway aside from Jennifer Lawrence being in the movie and thrown away into spikes and being killed of the whole thing. Like, honestly, it just, it went nowhere and had no other resonance to the entire thing. Like, so for me, I loved the fact that it was a long way to go for a dick joke.
Obviously, I love that Wanda is fully realized as the Scarlet Witch now. That's fantastic. However, I'm a little concerned about the Scarlet Witch being this entity that she is embodying. And I don't want it to become a Dark Phoenix situation.
But she's experiencing her Dark Phoenix. John Byrne dragged every female Marvel character through the mud. That's what he did. So, like, you can call it how, and then, like, you know, House of M, darker than Scarlet, like, all of it kind of works. Like, you know, she is this being, this potential being of great, you know, creation or destruction, stronger than the Sorcerer Supreme. We all know absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's the name of the game. So, like, if she does go dark, so be it. Chances are it won't be her fault. Just like I said, it wasn't her fault. But I mean, that if we get that sort of Dark Phoenix arc, I totally trust them to do it well, because Fox hasn't been able to put it off, and they've tried at this point, what, 3 times?
Yeah,
twice. Yeah. But yeah, no, exactly. But and the thing is that I have a ton of faith in Feige running the Marvel movies, because they'll give it time to breathe and grow. The reason why the Fox Phoenix never worked is because you took something that happened over a period of time in the comics. You took something that in the 90s cartoon took 5 episodes for her Phoenix saga, and then 5 episodes for the Dark Phoenix saga, 10 full episodes to go from being inhabited to being, you know, killed at the end of the Dark Phoenix saga, or ascending, because, or whatever, not ascending in the cartoon.
Throw herself into the sun.
No, in the cartoon, they didn't kill her. She got a piece of everybody's soul, and then Phoenix was killed.
Oh, yeah.
But they let it breathe. Every single iteration of the Phoenix has always had time to breathe. The Fox Marvel movies have always gone from point A to point Z in the course of a 2-hour movie. And you can't do that with that kind of character. With Wanda and Feige controlling that course of her character development, we'll see. We've seen a little bit of it in the series finale. We saw it in that post-credit scene. We'll see more of it in Doctor Strange, and then we'll see it continue to grow and develop through that arc of movies and or shows that she's involved with. And I'm 100% with Oral on the fact that I trust them to do it right.
I trust them to tell a great story. I just hope it's differentiated enough from Dark Phoenix.
Think of the makeup. Think of the heels. Think of the looks.
You're missing I think they've differentiated it already somewhat, because we kind of went from Wanda being in this place of not really insanity, but this place of just where her grief caused her powers to go absolutely fucking berserk and create this sort of safe haven in her own mind. And now we're kind of going to a place to where she's isolated herself, she's learning, she's growing, she's accepted more or less what she is. Now the question is, what are external influences going to do? And so, like, you've got the Darkhold, which is known to corrupt just about everybody that's even glanced at it. You know, we've got a whole multiverse of all sorts of creepy crawlies that she's going to run into. So I'm super excited. I'm pretty much trust Feige and them to do it well. But yeah, no, I totally get that fear, Eric, though. I was nervous that was going to happen too, but the show kind of alleviated my fears.
And I mean, come on, that hair in her full Scarlet Witch outfit, her hair needs to be that big. Every
that
single time.
That ensemble is amazing.
Oh my god. When she came down in that full outfit, I literally like stopped and was like, damn, she is gorgeous. It just, that whole thing, head to toe. I wish it was a tiny bit redder, but it gave me so much of Kevin Wada's Scarlet Witch redesign for her, was it 2015 solo series? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was, and actually Wada on Twitter, after the finale, put up a bunch of the sketches from like the brainstorming of her redesign, and getting to see those again and see like the progression of where he was at with some of it was stunning.
I never checked if they gave him credit, but God, I hope they did, because as soon as I saw that, I screamed. I was like, oh my God, he has got to be so excited and happy if he didn't already know.
Yeah. And honestly, it's amazing. I have to go back and reread that run of Scarlet Witch, because I really enjoyed it when it first came out, but I forgot that it dealt with grief and like therapy, and mm-hmm. that played so much a part of the final portion of the show. Brian, what were your critiques and or things that could have been better for WandaVision?
If that is your real name.
Okay. I do love the meta ideas of the show. I love the fact that it was like a show within a show. I think they explored that a good amount, but I would have loved more of that. I would have loved more of the side characters later in the series. I kind of mentioned that earlier. They kind of like faded away for the most part. I think Eric, you said more exploration of different eras and sort of that. I'd eat that stuff up. One issue and criticism I have, and I didn't mention it before, and you know, it's one of those that I understand sort of, I hate to say the words, both sides, but I do understand that this is a discussion that's kind of complicated. So you have a heroine who is basically violating a whole town's consent. And then sort of not getting any comeuppance. I mean, a little bit, but not a lot. And if I didn't love everything else about the show, if I was not fully into the characters, the lore, the way they executed it, everything else, if I wasn't into all of that, I would have a bigger problem. And it's one of those things that when you realize that discontinuity in your ethics or your whatever, and in your preference, it's a hard thing to justify, but it is odd in this day and age where we have such accountability for people in violating consent, that to make a whole story about somebody doing that to a whole town, and not just, and so this is the thing, I will say, is a saving grace, they didn't like sugarcoat it. They several times over pointed out this is a bad thing, so I think that's as good as you can do, is to show that and not shy away completely. But it is still a weird arc to take a hero and have a hero's journey of sorts, but end in a kind of a different place. And that's like, maybe that's why this works, and have it all be about violating people's consent. So I don't know. There's more to unpack there. I know it's fiction and I know it's fantasy, so I'm not going to, you know, rain all the woke points down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not coming at it that, upset, I should say, but it is something to discuss, and I think it's something to sort of be aware of.
And I think because honestly, I kind of had that same initial reaction, because she legit just walks through the town and flies away. But the part that we have to, I think, in a small way, do is, it's a world of superheroes, and it's a fantasy world, and having that suspension of disbelief of our real world versus what this is, and it kind of still needs to happen. We're all super hyper aware of it because of the events of the last year. So I think it's a bit tougher in that respect, but I don't necessarily hold my superhero world to the same of like the same standards and regards of the real world. You know, it's kind of where that whole the whole Wonder Woman 1984 conversation we had back, you know, just after Christmas with like that whole thing. Like it's there is a certain level of if this were a comic book and this story was painted out in a comic book form, we probably wouldn't be having these same discussions. But because it's live action with real people playing these characters, we look at it in a real world perspective. And that's not to say that I think any, like that we should ever look at it and just go, eh, whatever, this is fine. And, you know, in real life. But I think if there was something in a reality type of show where there was something in that, it would be different than in the superhero world.
But it so what's interesting to me is I mentioned this when the last time we had our WandaVision talk is out of all the characters, the one that almost seems completely useless is Hayward. However, the thing that Hayward has kind of shown is kind of there's this weird sort of distrust or hate or just straight, like he just straight up at one point is just like, oh, I'm just going to murder Wanda. Like, even though she didn't steal his body, like this dude straight up villainizes her because he has an issue with people with abilities. And I believe that's so we had in the comics, we had Wanda established and everything, and then she completely fucks up all the mutant shit. I think in a way we're kind of seeing the consequences for that are now. So when we do finally get mutants in the MCU, there's going to be a whole thing of like, well, this superpowered being did this. And then, and so I feel like her consequences are just sort of starting. And there is going to be kind of a reckoning for it. And I think that's what we will probably see some in Doctor Strange. Also, we've got Baron Mordo out there making a case to fucking murder witches and sorcerers. So I think there's a possibility we might see her issues coming up here soon.
I think you're right. And I want to also say that I 100,000% think they did a better job with this issue than Wonder Woman 1984 or Wonder Woman 84, because they actually dealt with it. Like, they acknowledged it. I didn't love, if of all the things yes, but like, I didn't love her comment as she's walking out of the town, like, they'll never see me as, or, you know, that beat. I get why you put that beat in there, because you're trying to sort of soften what you've just shown this hero to be in this epic way. You're trying to kind of give it a little bit more of its like, It's like, oh, no, you still care about her. She's sacrificed so much. So it's a functional thing, but I don't like it. I don't think it's organic to Monica as a character depicted in that show, but also just Monica Rambeau. I just feel like it was a functional thing that they had to put in there to help the audience along a little bit.
I will say this though, and I, because honestly, right up until you were talking about it, I felt the exact same way, but something just kind of clicked. Monica went through the hex and was a part of that and had the mind control. She felt Wanda's grief. She has a different relation to the entire thing than anybody outside of the hex, than us as viewers do. So I can see her relating that way, because she, if there were any way for me to share my pain about any subject with somebody else, they would have a completely different understanding of why I did something or why I felt a certain way. And that's what Monica was able to have with Wanda, where we feel disjointed about it. We don't have that same relation in that grief capacity.
Yeah, it's like forced empathy, and it may, and that totally tracks. I agree with you.
But at the same time, it doesn't feel organic, like you said. It doesn't close that wound for us as the viewer. And I almost kind of think it might be intentional because we don't know where Wanda's gonna go from here. And if they put her into a more gray area or a more kind of both sides of the coin, good and bad, it could potentially, we could look back at WandaVision and say, but look what you did. This, and still have that to be able to kind of hold against her versus just kind of absolving her from it and moving on.
I think the writers of the MCU movies and projects, TV, and the producers, especially Kevin Feige, like we've talked about, like they are not going to, they're going to be very aware of the consequences of this for her character for projects and projects to come. So 100% they've thought about this. I think this is sort of the, the Angelina Jolie plays from the Disney, the villainous.
Maleficent.
Maleficent. So this is this to me, this is the Maleficent for the Scarlet Witch. This is her origin.
First of all,
origin,
don't be
like,
disrespectful.
You know, from scratch.
Don't be disrespectful.
Why would you put those two things in the same sentence? I mean,
well, I don't mean in terms of the quality of Maleficent either, because I've honestly never seen it. But the idea of it being the rise of the Scarlet Witch, right? Into that, all that is, both good and bad. I think that is 100% what they were doing. So, I mean, it's consistent. I guess it just still, you know, has that discussion point, which is a good thing. We should discuss this issue, and we should have this in our continuity and awareness in life and in comics and in any art. So, you know, good job, writers. You unintentionally had us talk about that.
My only things that I kind
she of... doesn't even go here.
My only things that I thought, like, honestly, I could not fault the show for pretty much the entirety of the first 8 episodes. And I'm telling you, like, that 8th episode had me just, previously on is probably my favorite of the episodes from the standpoint of giving me, like, everything that I wanted out of the show. I felt a little empty in the last episode. Not because I didn't love it, not because I didn't love this show, but I felt like we fell back into Act 3 of all MCU movies, where it's two characters that have the same powers fighting each other. I would have liked to have seen, maybe at one point, and I know that there was that little tiny bit right at the beginning when White Vision shows up and then he goes to try to crush Wanda's head. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of a fight between the two of them, to kind of heighten that piece of her having to fight Vision. And then maybe Westview Vision having to tussle with Agatha for a little bit and giving us a little bit different than just same power sets fighting each other. But that's a minor nitpick, you know, because at the end of it, you know that Agatha has to deal with Wanda. You know that it was leading up to the philosophical debate between visions. The show was such a switch of expectation for what MCU is and will give us that it felt like it just fell back. It kind of was like the first Wonder Woman movie. The first 2/3 felt very much different than what it had given us. And then Zack Snyder came in the 3rd act and was just CGI and blowing things up. So I wish that there was more of the side characters. You've all have said that. I would have loved to have seen more of Darcy and Jimmy. And the kids were cute. I wish it was something a little bit different with them. But, you know, we've got more to come with them. You know that's going to happen. Young Avengers is going to happen. We have pretty much every single character involved with Young Avengers is involved in an upcoming property, so you know that's down the road somewhere. But I just, I wish, and I don't even know how to express it really. I just wish there was a little bit something different. And, but overall, honestly, Oral and I talked about this. We've talked about it on the show. This was what I was waiting for. I'm going to watch all the other properties. I'm going to watch the other shows. They're going to be fantastic as well, I'm sure. But this was what I was waiting for. And I walked away from it loving it. My only other critique were the dangling plot threads that I don't know if they're going to pick up on, because they felt central to this program. Like, so the post-credit scenes, we know Monica's going to go to space. That's going to be Captain Marvel 2. Nick Fury's up in space, even though Spider-Man Far From Home takes place a couple, I think 8 months after Endgame. This takes place 3 weeks after Endgame. We know that Fury is in space. We know that she said a friend of your mother's. We all know that's going to lead there. We saw Wanda at Wondegore Mountain. I swear Bova's in there in the back pruning the roses. Like, we heard Billy and Tommy call out. We know that it's all going to lead somewhere. It's Mephisto. Let's just call it now. but there were certain things like Jimmy's missing person. You know, like that plot thread. Just where does it go? I feel like there is no tie to something in the grander Marvel universe that is going to answer that question. It, maybe I'm wrong, and there will be a whole episode of, you know, Armor Wars or Secret Invasion that's going to be tied to it in the future. I don't know. But little things about, like, Dottie, like, it just didn't feel right or 100% full. And with the fact that Feige and the MCU, there's almost never not a reason for something that they do. I just feel like there were certain things in this show that felt central to this show that we might not get an answer for anymore. So if we do, great.
I would counter with, so Collider wrote an article, and it encapsulates, like, the title alone encapsulates I kind of like what you're touching on, but WandaVision failed to deliver things that were never promised to me. And that's the thing, like,
well, okay, so we'll talk, let's talk about that. But before we do, like, this isn't a fan theory. This is just something that I'm pointing out from what the show gave us that it didn't pay off. It's like Brian has talked about with tons of things on this show before, having the gun but not pulling the trigger. You know, like those little bits and pieces. So that's my only thing. And it's, again, a minute nitpick because I love this show. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about that article, because I saw BJ had shared it and I did want to get into it, because that's a huge thing, because so many people like to shit talk things afterwards because their expectations were let down because they were the ones that built up their own expectations.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what happened with Lost. And the reason why so many people were disappointed with Lost is because they had their own ideas of what the ending would be. And, I mean, things like when Monica said she had an aerospace engineer. And was that lady in the next episode when they got the moon rover the aerospace engineer? We don't know, because no name or rank was given to that person.
Exactly.
Is it Reed Richards? Who knows? But
well, Oral, do you have the article up?
Mm-hmm.
Oral, why don't you go ahead and read like the first two or three sentences, because it pretty much encapsulates everything right in those first couple of sentences.
For 2 months now, I've gone on Twitter after episodes of WandaVision, and everyone has been speculating about what's to come. The astrophysicist that Monica Rambeau, Tiona Paris mentioned. That has to be Reed Richards, because a new Fantastic Four movie is in the works. Sure, they haven't even finished the script, and director John Watts is still working on Spider-Man No Way Home, and a major piece of casting like that almost always leaks out in some form, but I was promised by the internet that John Krasinski would play Reed Richards, which of course would mean his real-world wife, Emily Blunt, was also being cast as Sue Storm, aka the Invisible Woman. The internet said so, and because Monica said the word astrophysicist, that has to mean Fantastic Four. Twitter told me so.
I mean, it legit encapsulates everything. And from our Patreon discussion a couple of weeks back, you said it best, Oral. You were like, a can of baked beans falls over. It's Mephisto. You know, yeah. Everything was, we were all dissecting all of those little bits and pieces and making up these like grand things.
No, it was, I read another article that where they interviewed the showrunner, and he was just like, yeah, Dottie's just a person in the hex. He's just like, and we know people thought she might be a witch, but she's just a person in the hex. Like, he's like, we thought it might be trolling. Then we realized it was trolling, and we're okay that it's trolling. Like, it's just one of those things where he's like, yeah, I like watching people drive themselves insane. I do too. Like, it's great. And that was one of the ultimate victories for me for the show, is everybody losing their minds.
But the whole thing with Dottie is that it was Agatha that pointed out to Wanda that Dottie was the center of everything going on. So mm-hmm. again, it was Agatha all along.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay. I love the, I was reading something, I forget where it was, but it was like the Agatha saw herself as the star of the show. So like when she comes up in the second episode and she's like, ooh, it's the star of the show. Somebody was like, she's just talking about herself. but yeah, no, it's fan theories and speculation are fantastic for what they are. And that's fan theories and speculation. And it kind of made me happy, because as much as I love some of my friends, including some who have helped us with interviews before, love you, Jay. But when you are on social media and you're like, I know where this is all going, and then it doesn't go there, I love it. Like, that's fantastic, because I've read source material too. I know where these comics, you know, like where stuff is brought from. But to see, when we did our Patreon discussion, I think I even said, I would love to see it be a show about grief with no real big bad pulling the strings. But I don't think Marvel's going to give us that. I stand corrected, and I am 1,000% here for it. To see Wanda go through the five stages of grief from episode 1 to episode 9 was amazing. It was phenomenal to watch. And for them to be able to fold a grief show into a Marvel format, I loved it. That was fantastic. Do I wish there was some other fun stuff that was thrown in there from the fan theories and speculation? Yes, of course, because I'm a fan as well, and I would have loved to have seen it. But, you know, really, I think my biggest gripe is just, who was the missing person? I want to know who they had to send S.W.O.R.D. to go help the FBI. Who was Jimmy Woo looking for? All right. So before we wrap it up and close it out for this episode, why don't we do a quick round of, now that we've seen the whole show, we've seen the post-credit scenes, we know what's down the pike, give me one wild conjecture and speculation that you would love to see come out of WandaVision. BJ, give us yours.
So I'm going to go ahead and call it that Spider-Man No Way Home, it's the whole kickoff point for that movie is going to be, while Peter's dealing with the fact that he's been outed, him, MJ, and Ned are literally just going to trip over one of Wanda's portals while she's punching holes in the universe. Like, that's the most Peter Parker thing I can think of, is that he literally just trips over a hole in the universe, and that's what kicks off No Way Home. So
I actually, somebody on Twitter that I follow, when No Way Home got announced, had brought up something that they had posted a while back, where they were talking about Peter and Ned and MJ, basically kind of like you, kind of in what you're saying, getting trapped in the multiverse and ending up in the Amazing Spider-Man world, ending up in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man world, and like having all these scenes where they're kind of like running through and having to kind of jump from reality to reality. and I'm totally here for it. So fan speculation run rampant. If I don't get that in Spider-Man No Way Home, it's a 1 out of 10 for me.
It's trash.
Brian, rampant speculation from you now that you've seen all of WandaVision.
I think the very last thing we heard was the souls of Billy and Teddy.
Tommy.
Tommy, sorry. Terrible.
God. Names, right?
It's the gay one is the only one I know.
They're both gay.
Bye, erasure.
Yeah, I forgot about that. See, I absolutely erased them.
He was just in X-Force or X-Factor.
X-Factor.
Hooking up with
Prodigy. You know,
what's his name?
Oh, that's
Prodigy. Yeah.
Really? Oh, yes. Okay, I did remember that now. Okay.
And then having that whole sexually fueled scene with North Star.
Oh, well. That was nice. yeah, they're going to have a Mephisto or something approximating Mephisto, if it's not full-on Mephisto, where Wanda sells her soul or does something terrible to bring her kids back. And that's I like from the comics. I like the ideas of that peril for her. And I think that's a good arc and believable. So I think that's where we're going.
All right, Eric, wild conjecture and speculation that's going to make me hate it. Whatever does come out, if it's not your actual fan theory?
I don't know. I don't think Wanda is actually going to be the one to break the multiverse, but she's going to take advantage of it to go after and find an alternate reality that has her kids and steal them and bring them to ours, a la Fringe. But it would just be awesome if... I know they'll never be together, and we already said it'll never happen, but if random other characters from Next Wave get introduced at some point in time, like, just give me Boom Boom. It's fine.
Oh, come on, Boom Boom, / Boomer, / whatever other... She has, like, 5 other names, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Gotta love her. We're gonna save Oral for last, because whatever he says will probably end up happening. So my wild conjecture is that we are going to get Mephisto and Master Pandemonium, and he's going to have baby arms, and it's going to be the souls of Wanda's children.
No,
literal baby arms.
No.
No, I definitely want to see either Mephisto or Nightmare or I don't know how to pronounce it right. Kathan, Chatan, whatever the demon god is that was trying to utilize Wanda to break through the fabric of reality and come into our world, which lends itself to the Darkhold ripping through reality. And Wundagore Mountain was his connection to this plane of existence, which I still say is where Wanda's having her Evermore / Folklore life right now. So that's my speculation. Oral, why don't you close us out in this episode with some wild conjecture and speculation that will probably end up being right.
Okay, so full on Darker Than Scarlet is coming. It is the final FU to Fox when they do a better Dark Phoenix saga that has nothing to do with the Phoenix. I totally concur with your Master Pandemonium with the baby arms. That is definitely coming. That is definitely coming. And I think Doctor Strange is going to be the reason why Wanda goes darker than Scarlet. Because he is not above manipulating people for better outcomes, knowing the cost and the price, because he let Tony die. And, you know, and granted, you know, he made the hero sacrifice, but whatever. So I think he's, you know, there's going to be a sense of jealousy because she is stronger than him. She was doing all of this on her own. I think he's going to make a mistake. She's going to go darker than Scarlet, and all hell will break loose. It'll be his fault. But for some reason, y'all always blame Wanda. That fucking redhead Jean Grey gets a pass, even though she ate a goddamn solar system.
No one cared about the broccoli people. and it was all retconned. It wasn't her. It was the Phoenix. She was healing in a cocoon in the bed.
Sounds like the caucasity of Jean Grey. That's what it sounds like.
And on that note, well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me for this discussion about WandaVision. I am sure we could sit here all night and nitpick and talk about all the little details, all of the little Easter eggs that were in all the episodes. And we could sit here and dissect the almost 6 hours of television that Kevin Feige and the team at Marvel gave us. But I think this was a fantastic discussion. We thank you, dear listeners, for hanging out with us. And we want to hear what you have to say. Go post about WandaVision on our Facebook page, on our Twitter, Instagram, wherever you want to. Come join our Discord. All of that can be found on our website, flameonshow.com. And you can check out our Rainbow Spotlight interviews on Mondays with Brian on his Twitch channel, twitch.tv/flameonbrian. You can catch it on our YouTube channel, our Instagram, our Facebook. It's everywhere that Flame On puts out great content. And we'll be coming to your ear holes on our podcast feed starting very soon on our off weeks. So you'll get to hear some of those Rainbow Spotlight interviews whenever you want to in your podcast feed. We are also on Patreon over at patreon.com/Flame On Show. So go check us out, become a patron, and help support us as we make this show.
And definitely, if you're free on a Wednesday night, if you like playing games, and I know a lot of us do, Pat's brought back Digital Game Night on Wednesdays with his Bears in the City brand. So it's twitch.tv. Bears in the City, right? Or is
yep.
it the?
And I always get. Okay. Yep. twitch.tv/Bears in the City. That is also linked on our flameonshow.com website. Go under the section We Like to Be Watched, and you'll find our Twitch channels there. But yep, thank you. I am back on Wednesday nights. I'm back on my bullshit, playing games, talking to a camera, and reading the things that get written in the chat. So come join us there. Come check out our Rainbow Spotlight interviews. Support our podcast, and yeah, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. Thank you, boys, for joining me in this discussion, and we will be
thank
back
you for having
in
me.
Just about 2 weeks with our March full cast roundup of all good things pop culture in the month. So until then, bye, bitch.
Bye.
Bye.
She was right. She was right. She did nothing wrong.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.